This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 553. I am Lisa Sheps, joined this week by my incredibly beautiful and smart and courageous co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live as we do on some Wednesdays at koop.org. Please stick with us.
Hurry, hurry, and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up.
It is Wednesday, January 29th, 2020. On the show today, we have the Filigree Theater and their show, The Turn of the Screw. And later, we'll be talking to Butch Mermaid Productions and Transhumance. And of course, we have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, San Francisco, Boston, Chicago, and Fresno, California. Stick with us. And the ladies stepping off a train. We have sort of a train theme today. Choo-choo!
Well, that's not why you chose that song.
That is not. Why did I choose that song,
Nicole
Shiro?
You chose that song because that was the Broadway cast album that won the Grammy.
It
and
is.
And because it's a really great cast album.
And it that cast album and the show that we're speaking of is Hadestown.
Yeah.
Hey, Persephone.
Persephone.
I just there was a wait don't tell me clue about Persephone, and I said I know that answer.
Oh my gosh! But my brother and I were watching something the other day, and Persephone came up too, and it was something old and random, so it wasn't like they were jumping on the Hadestown like let's talk about it train.
It's just kind of fun to say
Persephone.
Persephone.
Yeah.
Yep.
It is fun. It's a great show.
Quickly check in with you. Get to the microphone and tell me how you're doing.
I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah.
We missed you last week.
I missed you.
But you know what? You were listening. You were texted the entire time, which
the
I saw after the show, of course.
I was enjoying the stuff. My knee broke. I had some,
it happens.
Some issues.
And next week, you're going to be here by yourself or with a co-host.
I will be.
Yeah. And I'm going to be in the Lost of Wages. 7-11. Mama needs a new pair of pumps. So that's where I'll be.
You're making me laugh.
Yeah, well, somebody's got to. In the studio today, let's introduce the disembodied laughter we've been listening to. we have Anya Upstill. Hi, Anya.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We have Elizabeth Newman.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
And we have Polina Ficke Fox.
Hello.
Did I say that right?
Yes.
Awesome. And James Lindsley.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So, again, that was Hadestown, so we talked about that. But we did have... my papers are not in weird... They're in weird order. Did win Grammys. We did have a Broadway show that opened.
We did.
Yes. Grand Horizon.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Anybody know... Anya lives in New York. Do you know about this show? You follow theater when you're in New York?
I do follow theater in New York, but I do not always get tickets to it. Hadestown, for instance, has been incredibly difficult to go and see.
Yeah.
Too popular.
Yeah.
It does. It happens. And that, well, that's... you'll get me down a whole path of that one. Lisa's going to be like, don't set her off.
Don't, yeah, please don't.
So I'm going to edit myself today, Lisa.
Oh, excellent. That's a great thing. Well, this was Grand Horizons, which opened at the Helen Hayes Theater. And I'm just going to, so Jesse Green, not so much.
Yeah, didn't, I saw that. I was
Other critics were much more favorable, but I'm going to read the first two paragraphs of Jesse Green's, because we always talk about this. I'm sad for reviews that are not nice, but they're so much more fun than the nice ones.
It's
so much more fun.
And why am I into someone else's pain right now? That is not nice.
Not good at all. But, you know, I've never been known to be a good person. So to call Grand, quote from Jesse Green, to call Grand Horizons one of the brightest shows to hit Broadway in years is not to tout its intelligence, which flickers. Rather, I mean that it is blindingly lit. No doubt with deference to the theatrical wisdom that defines comedy as what lies in the dark. And boy, does Grand Horizons want to sell itself as a comedy. Not witty comedy with its verbal arabesques, or nor intellectual comedy with its Paris Review name checks, nor meta comedy with its scrambled plot lines. But the vanilla kind that once dominated commercial theater. It's not entirely meant as praise to say that this second stage production is a big laugh, blue joke, bourgeois lark of the type Neil Simon mastered until the times mastered him and the genre petered out. Ow. Yikes. And it goes on from there. But it tells the story of an elderly couple. And I do have
so
to say this.
So uncomfortable when you read that again. I'm like, oh, I felt it reading it myself through the screen. And now I'm like, oh.
Anyway, this is a play by Bess Wahl. It has Jane Alexander, James Cromwell, who you will recognize if you don't know him by name, Ben McKenzie, Michael Urie, and Priscilla Lopez.
So he's your farmer in Babe.
I've never seen Babe. The pig movie?
Yeah.
Never seen it. Oh, really? Everybody's looking at me
it's
like...
It's a classic.
You've never seen Babe?
I've never seen Babe.
It's
I'm
a talking
sorry.
Pig. What's not to like?
To
it's
me,
wonderful.
He's the bad guy in that movie, the... anyway, he's in one of those kill 'em up movies, and he was the good guy turned bad guy with that one of those evil actors that's now been Me Too'd.
Could be any movie at this point. I'm like, pick a movie.
This is some insight into the way my mind works. But anyway, it was written by Bess Wahl. And it basically tells the story of an elderly couple. They're sitting at a table, and the 80-year-old wife says, I want a divorce, after they've been married for 45, 50 years. And the effect that it has on their two adult sons. Not good overall, according to Jesse Green. Directed by Lee Silverman. And it said, Wahl and director Lee Silverman so overplay the sitcom style at the start. So that's there's really not much more to say other than that. Other than I will read the other reviews, which are much more charitable. Charles Isherwood in just
favorable.
Actually, they are.
I like charitable.
I like it too.
Charles Isherwood said, in just the first minutes of Bess Wahl's Grand Horizon, a supremely funny comedy of marital malaise, Jane Alexander and James Cromwell deliver a miniature master class in the art of slyly ambiguous acting. So that was nice. Hollywood Reporter's Frank Scheck said that much of this formulaic material nonetheless proves highly amusing is a testament to Wahl's often genuinely funny writing. And the Wrapped Tom Geyer said, yes, the humor can be brought as a U-Haul truck, but Grand Horizons delivered old-fashioned entertainment that becomes a rarity on Broadway. I don't know. They said, Jesse Green did say that community theaters will be doing this a lot. But you hear that from other shows that are really, really good.
But does he say that in a good way or a bad way, right? You know?
There wasn't a lot of judgment in context in the sense.
Sounds like there's great casting for older actors, though.
It does. And that's what I was going to say. And this is something that we're missing a lot in theater these days, is really good, substantial roles for older actors. So that's good, because some of us are there already. Just saying. Broadway Con. Has anybody ever gone to Broadway Con? Does everybody know what Broadway Con is?
I don't know what it is.
James is nodding. Let me give y'all a little piece of advice about the radio. Nodding does not work.
We'll take that into it.
Yeah. So Broadway Con, this is the fifth annual one. It's a fan convention for Broadway.
Awesome.
And there's a lot of cosplay and craziness that happens. And actually, in the New York Times... there's a New York Times article that's headlined, Where Broadway Fans Wear the Crowns and the Tentacles. And if you go to see it, which will be a link on our website, offstageonair.com, you see one of these fans, and it's a GIF, so it moves, doing Ursula.
Oh, amazing.
In his beautiful costume.
Love it.
So This is an article that just talks about what's going on in ConCon, and ConCon. So, all right, I have to take a little tangent here because I run a theater here in town, as most folks know, Ground Floor Theater, and I do this shtick in our concession stand about us winning the awards at the concession stand convention, ConCon. You know, it's the convention that celebrates concession arts. So, ConCon.
It is an art indeed.
It is an art. BroadwayCon is what I meant to say. So they have cosplay competitions. They have two floors of stalls for vendors. And
but do they have good concessions is the question.
I don't know. Well, probably not. They don't win at ConCon. they talk about this one. They talk in this article about different things that are going on, like the swap of memorabilia, playbills. There's a whole thing about swapping playbills. And I found it pretty amazing that this one for a 2008 In the Heights playbill with the original cast and everything, like, very valuable. Kills me. Does anybody have a playbill collection? Do you keep your playbills?
Yes.
You do.
I have from
forever?
I grew up in New York, so yeah, from forever.
Well, I just kills me. So I lived in New York for 20 years. I saw Fiddle on the Roof in 1969. I had those playbills forever. And when I moved to Chicago, I said, "Yeah." And
who
I
needs
got
these.
I threw them away. It was even prior to recycling. Oh. So threw them away, and I now just think about my 1969 Fiddler on the Roof playbill. Anyway, that's that.
It lives on in your memory.
Yeah. So, ConCon, I almost did it again. Broadway Con is up, and all sorts of wonderful things. There's a person that does cats in Broadway stuff and has little clever names like Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins. And then another one that I had because I'm reading it. So every sticker has its own pun. Mary Poppins is one. And one is, and I'll just spell it, L-I-C-K-E-D, licked. But it's not licked. It's licked. Get it?
Wow. Yeah.
Licked? Okay.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that is a pretty good one.
Yeah.
So that seems like an interesting thing. So you can see, evidently the big thing that's going on at the convention this year is Six, which is not even open yet.
Oh, yeah, I don't know how I feel about it.
Really? I really want to see it. I'm intrigued.
A friend of mine saw it in London and said it was wonderful. I love the music, and I saw the original when it first opened in London, and it had the trailer. Just looks amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
I've been so excited about it. I love the whole concept of everything, and then I watched a whole bunch, and I'm like, ooh, that kind of scares me.
I think it should scare you.
Not in a good way.
Oh, not in a good way.
No. So, I mean, I get it. It's like Spice Girly like, but it's yeah.
Oh, I think it's I think it's a little bit.
It's Spice Girls.
I think it's got more. No, I believe it has more substance than that.
I just want the costumes.
The costumes are great, and so is like the lighting and design. Like it's the whole and the whole idea of it is just
right,
really
story and just like it's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm in favor. I'm just going to say that right now. I vote yes. So I want to get to the other stuff that we're doing here, and I can't find my article that I had this, but there's an article in New York Times. I think it came out today. That's not it, but that's a funny one.
I was like, you better talk about that.
Well, we're going to try to get to it because we're running out of time already. But this was an article called Was Broadway Ready for Slave Play? Anybody see Slave Play?
I actually saw it at the New York Theater Workshop before I went to Broadway.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. I thought it was incredible.
Go ahead.
No, you ask.
No, you go.
I really thought it was incredible. It definitely, it was also one of the most stunning sets I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But I can also understand some of the critique I've heard.
Well, it had, when it was off-Broadway, it had a lot of protest and things like that. Not so much on Broadway. There was really just really only one talkback that had some issues around it. So Slave Play just use controversial, but that's not the word I was trying to come up with.
Bold.
Yeah, well, whatever. Yeah. Well, that'll work too. But yeah. Sparking.
Provocative.
Provocative.
That's the word I was trying that to come is up the
with.
Word.
This will happen to all of
ding,
you, by
ding,
the way.
Ding, 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 ding.
About, it deals with race relations, And it's very uncomfortable for us white folks to sit through, from what I understand. And it is it deals with a group therapy going through basically sex therapy and with themes of slavery. But anyway, so they had an interview with, this is also in the New York Times, with Jeremy O'Harris, Greg Nobile, one of the producers, and many of the actors. And they just asked him questions, which I thought these were some of the very interesting. And I actually, as I was reading this, I mentioned something a few months ago about it. Rarely when I read anything, much less an article in the newspaper, do I get like lumpy throat syndrome, which is a real thing, LTS. But I did this time, and I don't know why. But so there's questions they asked, and different people answered. I'll share just a couple. Question was, one goal of the production was to bring new audiences to Broadway. How did that work out? The producer said just north of 30% of our audience is what we call new to file, which means they were actually first-time ticket buyers. 30% is huge on Broadway. And then Jeremy O'Harris said something we saw a lot was the density of black and brown people, as well as young people. Everybody was in the mezzanine. And what I thought was interesting, he said when they were in rehearsal, Jeremy O'Harris only watched, or he says he only watched it from the mezzanine, but so that experience up in the balconies would be the one that he cared the most about. That's which great. Those are the people that are not paying as much for tickets. The question is, they had two nights that they called blackout nights where the audience was made up entirely of black people. What was that like? Robert O'Hara, the director, said, it felt more like church. When I walked up to my seat with 5 minutes to go until curtain, I realized we would never be starting on time because everyone there was communing with each other. It wasn't just having 800 black people in the Broadway theater. We actually took over the space. See?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Verklempt right there. For the same question, one of the actresses, Jacquina Kukongo, apologies. I felt like the weight of racial, I felt like the, this I love. I felt like the weight of racial trauma was carried into a room full of 800 people. I didn't have to carry it by myself. Wow. And it was one of the lightest feelings I've ever had.
It's beautiful.
It's really beautiful. They go on to talk about what the performers and the people had to do night after night and what they had to do to take care of themselves. And I really encourage people to go and read this article, because when you go to such an emotionally dense, possibly hurtful, triggering place every single night, sometimes two shows in a day, you need something to take care of yourself, because, you know, it takes a lot out of a performer to put themselves into those pieces. I remember, oh God, what show did I do? It was my show, Transom, at my theater. We had one character who was not a terribly nice person. And this poor actor was having the hardest time putting on those clothes every day. And we really had to work to make them feel like they were in a safe place. So I think this, it's a really interesting article. Things that I as a white person in this country don't think about every day, and that others have to think about every day. So
What's the title of it?
Slave Play. Oh, the title of the article, Slave Play. Was Broadway ready for Slave Play? And I think it came out on the 27th.
Thank you. I was like, it just came out like 2 days ago.
The byline is Elizabeth A. Harris and Reggie Uguwu. Apologies. It's not a heavy subject, but I was like this. So there's Broadway has a program called Theater Forward about making Broadway inclusive and accessible. And it's been around for 17 years. It's called the Forward Brownway Roundtable. It's an open-ended dialogue about the opportunity of access, education, and social justice, named their panelists. And I thought it was interesting. One was Blair Underwood, who's currently in
Soldier's Play.
Soldier's Play, thank you.
Because you left Jerry O'Connell out of that.
Amber Gray, who plays Persephone in a little show called Hadestown that we just talked about. Celia Keenan Bolger, who was just in To Kill a Mockingbird. And then the artistic director of Long Wharf Theater, Jacob Pedron, and Lois Smith, the artistic director of The Soul Project. I just thought that was an interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, I like all the stuff that they do.
Yep. And it's a wonderful picture of Celia Keenan Bolger. on this article with the step and repeat of MAC Cosmetics behind me. So for the audience, let me show them. I need to show the audience the picture.
She's in a lovely floral dress.
Look at those colors. She's very summery, and she's looking spunky.
She does. She's very springing alive.
She's got spunk essence. Karate Kid,
the musical.
The musical.
I'm sorry. What?
Karate Kid, the musical. What do we think of that?
I didn't know it was a thing, but I'm glad someone has finally told me. I think this is a great idea.
It's in developing
that.
I'm so excited to be on the moon and back.
I'm hearing that. What makes you so excited about
because
it?
Because I love Karate Kid, and it could be literally the worst thing on stage, and I wouldn't even care. I'd be so excited
that
people are so excited to have more Karate Kid in their life. I mean, it's been fodder in our house for days now about, like, we can already see the dancing skeletons and the shower curtain. Like, we've had, like, have you watched Karate Kid?
Not since it came out.
Exactly. But see, I know, and there's faces here going, yes. Daniel-san with his Halloween costume and the shower curtain.
I think you make a good point, actually. SpongeBob the Musical was excellent, so I have hope for Karate Kid.
I have hope for Karate Kid. People say great things about SpongeBob. So, I I have no problem with it in any way, shape, or form.
So the book is by Robert Mark Kamen, who wrote the screenplay for the film, which was in 1984.
Oh, yeah. 84, greatest year for films.
The music.
Let me go. That was a good year.
The music and lyrics are by Drew Gasparini, and it is directed by Amon Miyamoto, who directed Pacific Overtures in 2004. Mm-hmm. Choreography by Keone and Mari Madrid.
Yeah. So, yeah. There's the...
Wait, what's his face? James.
I'm so excited. I love everything you're saying.
Oh, cool.
The creative team around it is so exciting. There's so many...
The guy that wrote the original screenplay. You, mm-hmm. You have the guy that did Pacific Overtures. I mean, this sounds great. I'm in 100%.
Casting has not been called yet. We've sold two tickets. That's great. And the casting hasn't been announced yet, but there is a picture of Pat Morita and Ralph Macchio.
Yep.
So it could be them.
And I say hi, and I bow, and I'm so excited, and
good. I wanted you to be well. And so Michael Riedel had an interesting comment today, article this week, and headline is Neil Diamond visibly moved by Broadway bio musical.
I saw that
visibly moved.
So there was, it's not titled, but they had a 2021, or there will be a 2021. I'm going to get this right. It's going to open in New York in 2021. But they talk about bio musicals. I did not know this, that Neil Diamond has Parkinson's. Did y'all know that?
Yeah.
No.
I
did not know.
If you saw him perform at the tree lighting for Rockefeller 2 years ago, you could tell it was like, I was like, oh, that hurt. Mm. And then he announced it. I want to say not too long after. I think he addressed it.
Yeah, so he said he was visibly moved when he saw a run through, and Will Swinson was in this.
I found that I was like, oh, that's not who I would have cast off right away. But I find it interesting. Have you ever seen Neil Diamond in concert?
Have not.
Oh, it's kind of epically like a Broadway show in the first place. Like,
but I would encourage folks to. So I had the album back in the 70s. It's a Neil Diamond album that not a lot of people know called Taproot Manuscript.
Oh, it's a good album.
And on the A side is a lot of pop hits. But on the B side is all this wacky native kind of world music. And I almost played it, but I try to play only show tunes. There's a song called Suleiman, which I think is really fun.
That's a great album. Mm-hmm. I love me some Neil Diamond.
So it is being directed by Michael Mayer, who directed Spring Awakening, among other things. Ken Davenport is one of the producers, and Bob Guido are also producing it. So Bob Guido, as we know, is one of the Four Seasons and the director behind a little show called Jersey Boys. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. Okay, so we need to get moving. I have time for one more.
You covered Karate Kid and Neil Diamond.
What I didn't cover was the fact that Broadway made its way into the hearings for the president. Forgot his name.
The impeachment hearings.
The impeachment hearings. Wow. Because they were saying, the Republicans were saying that that no one was in the room where it happened.
I want to be in the room where it happens, the room where it happens.
We are back. You're listening to Lisa and Nicole with Offstage and On the Air. We've been having a great conversation with our guests, Anya Upstill, Elizabeth Newman, James Lindsley, and Polina Ficky Fox. That is a hard name to say, Polina. And we did talk ahead of time. So I lived in Chicago on a street called Polina, which is spelled the same way. And I'm having, every time I stumble on your name, Polina is not a hard name to say.
I played Polina in Winter's Tale, so it gets even more complicated.
There you go. There you go. Every winter I grow a tail, so that's what's... anyway, they are all here with Filigree Theater's show, The Turn of the Screw, by Jeffrey Hatcher, based on the short story. And we have here Elizabeth Newman, who is the director of the piece and the artistic co-artistic director of Filigree Theater. Did I get that right?
Director. The artistic director.
The artistic director. Yeah. But there was two of you, isn't there? Wasn't there? Isn't there?
So lovely Stephanie Moore was our co-managing director for our seasons one and season two.
She's gone.
She's now doing some great, great work with the Lake Travis Film Festival, which is coming up. Hop and launch that.
Okay, great. And we have two of the actors. We have Polina Fricky Fox.
Yes, hi.
Yeah, hello. We do a lot of saying hello on this show. And Mr. James Lindsley.
Hello.
Excellent. So tell us about this show, Elizabeth.
Yeah, so it opens tomorrow, which is very exciting. So it's based, as you were saying, it's based on the short story by Henry James, a classic.
I call him
story.
Hank.
Yes, Hank James. Yeah, he's from Austin.
Yeah.
The classic ghost story, and Polina plays the governess. There are only two actors. You have the entire cast in your studio here.
There
are only two actors in the play. So Polina plays the governess, and James plays all sorts of different characters, from the housekeeper, Mrs. Gross, to the narrator, to a 10-year-old boy named Miles. And so the governess goes up to this old, isolated estate in England to care for two young children and confronts spooky, terrifying things.
And there was, not about this show, but about the Henry James novel, there was I discovered in my extensive research that there was an episode of Dark Shadows that was based on it.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. For those of us of a certain age, we remember Dark Shadows. Awesome. So tell us about your character as the governess, Polina.
The governess is very complex. She's very young, and she's just come up, and this is her first job, first time caring for children, and she wants to be in charge and take care of everything, but things start to go awry when she starts seeing things, and you're not sure what's real and what's not, and there are some feelings on the surface and some she's trying to keep pushed down.
And tell us about it, your main character or some of your characters, James.
Well, I would say I have three main characters, which is the narrator, and then Mrs. Gross, who's the housekeeper, and Miles. Mrs. Gross is your classic English housekeeper, proper, generally good person, and she has been taking care of these kids by herself until the governess gets here, and then Miles is recently returning early from school, is when we meet him. He was sent away from school.
Miles
for some
is a 10-year-old.
Yes, he is a 10-year-old boy. And
what fun!
Oh, he's my favorite to play, obviously.
James does a great job.
Well, thank you. But yeah, he's your normal 10-year-old boy, rambunctious, but he has some other stuff going on.
He has some secrets.
Yeah, he has like a secret or two under the surface.
Well, great. You said that with a smile, a mischievous smile at that.
Well, I know we're going to hear a little scene from this in just a little second, but I need to go off on another little tangent. And Polina, I'm going to ask you to choose a number between 2 and 53.
Seven.
Seven. Let's see what that is.
Hello, I'm Liliane Montevecchi. and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP, Haunts by Austin. Bonsoir, bonjour, and I love you all. Je vous aime tous beaucoup. Au revoir, mes chéris.
Okay, we have not heard from her in a while.
No, and I was just listening to the original Nine album the other day, and I'm like, I love Lilian Montevecchi.
Lilian Montevecchi.
Playing Lilian Lefleur with Raul Julia. Oh, that just made my day.
There we go. Well, we needed to make your day.
I did need that.
So we've just heard a little bit about the show itself and the characters, and you're going to do a scene, yes?
Yes.
Does somebody want to set that up for us?
Sure, I will.
Please.
Thanks, ma'am.
Sure, guys. So in this scene, they're by the lake at the house. Miles has recently returned from school, and the governess is trying to get some information out of Miles. Flora, the little sister, is playing elsewhere. So this is a scene between the governess and Miles.
Okay, this is Paulina Frickley-Fox and James Lindsley doing a scene from Filigree Theatre's The Turn of the Screw.
Are you troubled, Miles?
Not really.
Would you like to play?
I'm too old to play.
Oh.
I like a real thing.
So do I.
I like to spin.
And that's not playing.
I spin for real. Would you like to see?
I would.
I'm not in a spinning mood.
You're a tease, Miles.
I've been told that.
Where? At school? You know, girls aren't sent off to school. My father taught me at home. He only let me read the Bible. But I'd sneak in other books. Poems, romances. I had to read fast, though, because if he found out I was deceiving him, he'd take my books before I could finish. Sometimes I had to read the last page first just to know how the story ended, in case my book was torn to bits or burnt. Mine was not a happy education. Were you very happy at your school, Miles?
I'm happy enough anywhere.
You know, I can teach you quite a lot. I can teach you the stars and planets, the seven seas and the five senses.
I already know the five senses. Sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. I also know the seven seas and the eight planets and the geography of Eden and where little babies come from. What can you teach me?
Well, I'm sure I'll think of something.
Doesn't matter. You're Flora's tutor, not mine.
Flora is far better behaved than you. Flora would read to me if I asked.
If she could speak.
Miles.
And I would speak if I could read. It's a disease. My eyes don't see the words in the right order. They go all around.
But if you can't read, then how did you learn to play the piano so beautifully?
Different. One can learn by listening and by touching.
Well, if you can't read to me, then I shall tell you stories. But you'll have to trust the teller.
I trust you.
Do you?
My uncle does, so we all must. Would you like to see my uncle come down, miss?
Why, I want whatever your uncle wishes.
If you wanted him to come, he would. You could write to him.
I don't think I shall, Miles.
Hmm. Well, what would make him come down? We should think on that.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm already scared.
Oh, just you wait.
So that amazing.
I was intrigued.
Intrigued. The whole studio audience here was like listening on the edge of our seats, listening. So Elizabeth, this is the third season of Filigree Theater.
It is.
So why this show at this time for your theater?
So each of our seasons has an overlying theme, an overarching theme. And this season, our theme is fear and fearlessness. And with each of our shows, we're examining those feelings, sensations, topics. And so for this show, it's our winter show. So it's playwrights living and working today. And so which is Hatcher. And, you know, who doesn't love a classic ghost story in the middle of winter? Even though middle of winter here in Austin is 70 degrees.
Yeah, you wear your shorts here.
Yes, exactly. Well, something that was really intriguing about it is that it has the ability to be very, very pared down. We're going up at a photography studio down on South First Street and that has a psych, you know, a curved wall, which is painted black. So it's, and the set is very, very minimal. It's a chair and two little tables. Much of the lighting is not traditional lighting, is being done with candles. and LED candles. and so it was the ability to sort of get to the essence of, you know, who, are you afraid of the dark? I am a little bit.
Yeah, I will say yes, I am totally afraid of the dark.
Are you?
Wait, well, I'm afraid of everything.
I'm just afraid of these guys in the dark, I have to say.
We're quite terrifying.
Yeah. So, well, and it's a classic horror theme is to have the whole children thing. There's a Hulu series that's about to come out, and I've been watching the little trailers for it, and it's just creepy. The creepy yes. kids.
My brother sees a child in any like spooky story, and he's like, that's it. Children and creepy stories, just that's just scary there.
So would I want to take my my family and my kids to see this show?
Thank you for asking. No, this is a show for grown-ups. Actually, my daughter has very kindly been our eye line for Flora for uh-huh. the beginning of some of our rehearsals. Flora is Miles' younger sister, but is invisible. You know, they relate to her as if they can see her, but in order to help know where a seven-year-old's head would be and how you put your arm right. around or hold mm-hmm. hands. And so she is a little bit mad at mommy that she doesn't get to see the show that she loved. Nope, 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 nope,
nope.
So it's like PG-13, or you think it's old?
Like a PG-13. Like, there's nothing explicit, but it's a horror. It's a horror story.
So, yeah.
It
deals with mature themes.
It does. Thank you, James.
And are you doing any kind of talkbacks or anything with this?
We will, after each show, have a little opportunity, sort of casual talkbacks with mm-hmm. a little champagne and cookies with the audience and cast and crew.
Excellent. When do you said you open tomorrow.
We do indeed.
How long do you play?
We run Thursdays through Sunday this weekend and next weekend, so through February 9th.
Wonderful. And again, you said you were at the Rami Susskind Photography Studio.
Yes.
On South First. And where can folks go to get more information about the show?
On the Filigree website, filigreetheater.com.
Right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And I wish you have a wonderful run. I will say that, you know, we spend a lot of time here in Austin with the lack of theater spaces. And it's, even though that's really bad news, generally speaking, it has forced a lot of theater companies to find unconventional places to do their work and to show their creative juices, and I applaud you for doing that.
Thank you, and Romy's been wonderful, and she's as an artist, photographer, she's been great working with us.
Cool. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time. That was Elizabeth Newman, and yeah, that's right. I can't read my own writing today. Elizabeth Newman, James Lindsley, and Paulina Fricky Fox. Why?
You're great.
Fox. Filigree Theater, The Turn of the Screw by Jeffrey Hatcher. January 30th through February 9th at Rome Susskind's Photography Studio on South First. For more information, filigreetheater.com. We'll be right back.
God, my prince.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello.
I do want to say that we just want to send love and caring out to Liz.
Yeah, my mom's having some surgery tomorrow. Yeah. And I'm not there. That's, yes.
Yeah.
Love and light to mama.
Love and light to mom.
Liz is a big supporter of this show.
She's a huge supporter. We love her. And we would love her even if she wasn't a supporter of the show.
Yes, so that is true.
There you go. Locally, a couple things came across. I just want to mention again, third week in a row, to mention the Unified Auditions. It's always a good thing to do, and that's, I believe, this coming up weekend.
Like, I think it's
this Monday.
Right.
At the Vortex, and you can find information at austincreativealliance.org. But I saw this interesting theater company I didn't even know about called the Cedar Park Theater Company. I'm guessing they're in Cedar Park.
What gave that away?
Seems like a good idea. But they're doing a stage reading of a new musical called Sunflower, which deals with, it's a musical that faces bullying, loneliness, and belonging. It's the power of art to inspire and lift up, about finding the courage to be oneself and the importance of kindness and inclusion. And it's being done at the Zach Theater, the Kleberg Stage.
That's awesome.
And that's really great. And you would find information about it now playing Austin. I do not believe that Cedar Park Theater has a website per se, but you can find them on the Facebooks. But the show itself is at 6:30 on dun da da dun 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 February 2nd. And there is a talk back after the show. For more information, you can email jlblake6@gmail.com, or as I like to call it, gmail. Gmail. And speaking of Zach, we have the Janis Joplin musical back again.
A Night with Janis Joplin.
And it opens in a couple of weeks, right?
So actually, tonight is the first night of previews. It's starting tonight, and it's the original Tony-nominated Mary Bridget Davies playing Janis. And the creative team came back. The original creator, writer, and director, Randy Johnson, came back. The original choreography by Patricia Wilcox. So... it's kind of smoking and fun, but it's funny you picked that because you said Clayburgh, and I have to tell you, at Zach, they have the Very Hungry Caterpillars show right now. Did you ever read those Eric Carle books?
Did not. Can't read.
Oh my gosh, with the firefly and the brown bear. You're shaking your head, right?
Oh yeah.
It's puppets.
They're nodding their head.
And they're, just saying. They're nodding their head. Affirmation. It's puppetry and these it's the 50th anniversary of the Very Hungry Caterpillar.
Okay.
And there's also an event at the Botanical Gardens with it, with the caterpillar.
Cool.
So it's just it just made me live through my childhood again, seeing the caterpillar everywhere.
Where do they get information on this? Caterpillar.com?
No, ZachTheater.org and Austin Botanical Gardens.
There you go. All right. Today in theater history.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun.
Today
in theater history, well, we all remember back in 1860 when Anton Chekhov was born that day.
Oh.
Today, lots of very interesting birthdays today, I should say.
Why did I think he was born later?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Well, it doesn't say anything about what time he was born. Just
no,
what
I meant years.
I knew
but
what
you know.
Meant. So we're going to jump all the way up to 1917, and it's the birthday of John Raitt.
Oh.
Yeah, he was in the original Carousel
mm-hmm.
and the Pajama Game.
Slightly related to Bonnie Raitt.
Yes.
just ding, ding, ding. Pull it all together.
This is also the director of composer and lyricist, Leslie Bricusse, who wrote with Anthony Lully, Stop the World, I Want to Get Off.
Oh.
Roar of the Grease Paint, Smell of the Crowd.
Yeah.
And then...
today's birthday of them? Is that what mm-hmm. you said?
And also worked with Frank Wildhorn on not only Jekyll and Hyde, my favorite.
Alice?
Hmm?
Alice?
Nope, Victor Victoria.
Yeah, I was just talking about that show the other day.
Okay. This, in 1947, All My Sons, Arthur Miller's All My Sons mm-hmm. opened, starring Arthur Kennedy and Ed Begley.
Ed Begley.
Not Ed Begley Jr., but no. Ed Begley. It ran for 41 weeks. It was his very
first
hit.
Senior?
It would be the senior. 1966, Lisa Sheps is 8 years old, and it is the opening night of Sweet Charity.
Ah, really?
Yep. Director Bob Fosse with Gwen Verdon, his wife, composer Cy Coleman, lyricist Dorothy Fields, and librettist, the person we were talking about, Neil Simon.
Neil Simon. You know there's got to be something better than this.
There's got to be. And then in 1986, there's the musical Uptown It's Hot by Maurice Hines. Open at the Lunt Fontanne.
I think that's Gregory's brother.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It is indeed.
I was like, I remember this. Just talking about Gregory Hines.
And
this week,
totally
too.
Forgot about this. In 1998, Paul Simon's The Cape Man.
Oh, I didn't forget about this.
So it's a musical, Paul Simon, about a real life murderer who seeks salvation and forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. The cast is crazy.
The book is by Derek Walcott. Who's in the cast?
Oh my gosh, I can't think of his name right now.
I'm gonna have to look.
I'm gonna have to look it up because I can see him. And
anyway, the book was by Derek Walcott. While she's looking that up, it had a whole bunch of family members of the murder victims that picketed opening night. It ran for 68 performances.
Yeah, wow.
All right, here. If you don't have it in the next 2 seconds, I'm going on.
I'm going on.
No, we're done. Stop looking.
I have to know. It doesn't matter. Mark Anthony, J-Lo's ex-husband.
Also the birthday of W.C. Fields, Mary Eaton, Professor Irwin Corey. Well, I've worked with a couple. Irwin Corey would do these corporate events all the time, and he would start his things. He would always start his speeches with, anyway, Victor Mature, Tom Selleck. Amongst other people.
Tom Selleck.
So let's take a little break and we'll talk to our final guests. And
boom,
this is from that oft-named show, Sweet Charity.
Oh.
Maybe not. I have to be on the right thing on my computer for it to work. Here it is.
I love to cry at
weddings. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with me and Nicole.
We're here.
We're here. Don't fear. Whatever. So we have with us here in studio from straight from New York City, Anya Upstill.
Hello.
Hello. Whose show Transhumans. Am I pronouncing that right? Because it seems to me when I talked to you about it, you pronounced it a different way.
I put the emphasis on transhumance, but because I think of it as like transhuman romance, but I actually don't know where it's supposed to be.
Huh?
So well, say it like you will.
So we're going to get to this in a second, but I looked up that word. It's an actual word, and you may even know that already.
it is, yeah.
Because I didn't. And we also have here Emmett Hunker, who is the producer here in Austin for the show. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Awesome. Welcome to the show, Emmett. Anya, what is this show, Transhumance?
This show is a clown's journey through gender. It is inspired by my own experience as a genderqueer human.
Yep.
And it's a clown show because I'm a clown.
Transhumance, when I looked it up, it's actually a term that deals with farming and cattle ranching. And it's the action.
Wait,
what? Was so surprised to see this because I forgot why. I did a Google search for transhumance to see if you had a website. The action or practice of moving livestock from one grazing ground to another in a seasonal cycle, typically to lowlands in the winter and highlands in the summer. But it's also has to do with people moving from place to place as well, which is why it's apropos to what you're doing.
Exactly. The fluidity of livestock grazing or the fluidity of gender. You know, let's just cross some boundaries.
Yeah. Well, I will say I was fortunate enough to watch a rehearsal last night. So I have some firsthand experience with it. It's quite fun. Tell me about developing this piece.
Sure. It started because I kept making clown pieces and they all ended up being about gender. Specifically about being genderqueer.
I might be onto something.
Yeah, I was like, wait, there seems to be a theme. And so last year I did a sort of development season with Undiscovered Country's Blast Off program in New York, which is an incubator for new work.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, I decided to make a full show. So 45 minutes of me clowning.
And have you been traveling around the country doing it? Are we getting the premiere here in Austin, Texas?
You're getting the premiere here in Austin, Texas. And then I'm off to Australia and New Zealand.
Oh, well, that's exciting.
Of course.
Yeah.
And Emmett, you are producing it here. Can you tell us about your role in the piece?
Yeah. So me and Anya connected without having met, but a friend of ours connected us, and then we were able to meet when I went to New York in the winter. And basically, I'm helping get the word out. I know a lot of queer people in Austin. And so trying to get them to see this beautiful clown show.
Yeah, and they should. And I would say not only for the queer community to come out and see it, but we need to get the unqueer people out there to see it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to start a conversation about non-binary genders and identities because it, you know, is about that. And also, I think it's something that increasingly is talked about and they're increasing people identifying as non-binary or genderqueer, et cetera.
So now when many people think of clowning, they're going to have a very specific picture in their mind of what a clown is and what clowning is. Do you want to dispel that myth at all?
Thank you for asking that because I was just about to ask. So thank you, Lisa.
Yeah, I agree. I think most people think of two things. They think of It, which is terrifying, and not at all like my show. And they think of American-style circus clowning.
Correct.
Which is not really it either. So I think of clown as more of a physical theater form and a perspective on the world which, in the words of Avner the Eccentric, is doing complicated things in a simple way and doing simple things in a complicated way.
And so much of the story is told without words, correct?
Yes. I don't speak as a clown.
Although there is a soundtrack that involves words.
But as a clown, you do speak for all clowns.
I speak. Oh.
Wow. Now you're getting deep here, Lisa Sheps.
I think I can speak for my clown. Non-verbally speaking for my clown.
No, of course, no one person can speak for their entire group. Thank you. But I just couldn't help but say
no,
that.
No, you're going for that hard-hitting news today.
So I would think that, I think a parallel to more commercial productions would be more Cirque du Soleil than Ringling Brothers.
Definitely. Thank you. Yes, that's a good comparison.
Okay, thanks for being on the show.
I was going to say, it sounds like a... I mean, does it have kind of some Commedia dell'arte kind of movement to it in a way where...
It's evocative of Commedia dell'arte in that it's that same sort of exaggerated form. Mm-hmm. I don't deal with the exact same archetypes as Commedia.
I love it. So it's kind of like pulling all these wonderful bits that's your, but it's all yours in your clowning sense.
Yes, in my clowning sense.
Yeah.
And I will say that that watching it last night, you have a wonderful way of emoting with your face and your body that is subtle and large all at the same time.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, I think clown is definitely a heightened form, but I'm glad that it doesn't come across as aggressive.
Correct.
Kind of way.
Yeah. So tell, is there anything that you can, without giving anything away, a little bit more about the story arc of this piece?
Ooh, what can I give away? I suppose it's really about figuring out that you don't fit in with the gender binary. That's probably...
And that's okay.
And that's okay! Yes, thanks, Emmett. It's okay! Yeah.
And I mean, and I don't think it's giving anything away. So it's all in the... as you mentioned last night, a turn-of-the-century train station.
Yes.
And we use travel as a metaphor.
Yes. Yes, that's the sort of metaphorical world that this lives in.
So I want to just touch on, you're doing this as part of Frontera Fest Long Fringe.
I am, yes.
Okay, and I just wanted to, I want to take a moment, if you don't mind, using some of your time to just let folks know what other Long Fringe pieces are out there, because there's some good stuff there. There's a one-man show called Stand Up Jesus by Robert Duback, and I saw his rehearsal, and it was very fun. Local artiste Charles Stites is doing Straight Jacket, Variations on a Theme of Horror. And then finally, we have a group of people. I have to find out where it is. Oh, it's called Possibilities. It's storytelling, poetry, improv, and song. So it's sort of a group thing. My headset just went out, so I got very quiet in my ear.
I was like, I saw this weird motion, and I was like, what's happening?
I had to make sure it wasn't
sound disappearing would be a...
So how has your experience been with the Long Fringe so far?
Oh, it's been great. It's at Ground Floor Theater, which is beautiful. It's a stunning space. I went to UT and I used to live in Austin, so it wasn't there when I used to live here. And it's been a very supportive community to be a part of. It's been good.
Awesome. And so who wants to come see your show? What's your demographic?
I think according to Facebook, no. My demographic is 18 to 35. But I think my demographic is anyone who wants to laugh, who wants to maybe look at gender in a more exploratory way, who's interested in the idea of a clown exploring gender. Mm-hmm. Emmett, you saw the rehearsal. Anyone you want to add to that?
Yeah. I actually think you made a great point, Lisa, when you said it should be for people outside of the queer community. Because I think Anya does such a good job communicating the simplicity and like the complexity of gender in a really, really fun way. So I think people who don't really understand a lot of talk, you know, Merriam-Webster, word of the year was they.
Yeah.
So, like, if people are like, I don't really get it, they should see this. They really should.
Yep. And I think that one of the things we talked about yesterday was age groups and whether it's good for kids or not. And I'm just going to say that I would take any age to this show. I don't see a problem, especially I would love my tweens and a little older child to see it to spark conversation.
To have conversations, mm-hmm. yeah.
Because if it's not something they're dealing with, they're probably someone in their world or friendship or who they're
Well, let me just tell you something.
Communicating with, you know?
Everybody deals with gender.
Oh, yes.
And there's not a person in the world that doesn't deal with gender. Yes.
I agree with that.
Even if they don't realize it.
Even if they don't realize it. So when do you open?
We open tomorrow at 7 p.m.?
I think so.
Yes, it is 7 p.m. I checked it.
And you play through Saturday.
Saturday. There's two shows on Saturday and one on Friday.
Well, great. And do you know where to send people for information? Or should I just say it?
You say it.
Best place to go is HydeParkTheater.org. There's also a link on Ground Floor Theater's website, groundfloortheater.org. Well, thank you guys so much, or thank you all for coming so much to this thing. Get gender out of my, although I have no problem with you guys as a neutral thing, sure. But I'm trying to ungender most of my language.
Growing up with you guys in New York, and it's taken on a whole different, like when I say it, and I'm like, it's just a you guys in New York.
Okay. Well, thank y'all for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
And I hope you have a great run.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Anya Upstill and Emmett Honker of Butch Mermaid Productions' production of Transhumance by Anya Upstill. For more information, by the way, it's January 30th through February 1st at Ground Floor Theater. For more information, HydeParkTheater.org. We'll be right back.
Mr. Clown.
Come on and smile, Mr. Clown. Speaking of gender, we're going to change that to Hey You Clown.
Hey You Clown.
Hey You Clown.
I think you should just call up the Maggie Flynn and tell them all.
So go to offstageonair.com, see clicks to link. Make sure you read, or I'm going to just suggest that you read that Slave Play article. It's really a nice read.
Yeah, there's going to be links and you can find it all. You don't have to go searching. Nope. It'll be right there.
Yep. You can also go to offstageonair.com and click on the link to get added to our podcast.
Yes, you can.
There is no Backstage at Offstage today, so this is going to be it for us this week. Nicole will be back next week with a whole new group of people. Stand by for Austin Monitor News coming up next. This is from a show.
I was about to say, why did you choose this last
piece? Because I'm now in love with this show called Octet, which was written by, and I just lost his name, the same guy that wrote Ghost Quartet. This is this wonderful song cycle that I just found today, and this is a brand new release. It just came out this week, and this is called Fugue State from Octet.
I have a joke. I want to tell it to everyone, but yesterday there was a tragedy. And so my joke must wait.